probably be done by then. Never know. Maybe not. All right, thank you, Daryl. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for an informal today on case number PU 13-793. It is Wednesday, January 15th, approximately 1:30. The informal today deals with a North Dakota PSC case number, like I said, 13793, Basin Electric Cooperative's wind turbine decommissioning investigation. When the company initially filed to build the turbines, they file a decommissioning plan. North Dakota state law requires that the Public Service Commission can issue bonds after 10 years. So in this case, the 10 years has expired or elapsed over this project, part of this project anyway, and the commission is basically going through and looking at the decommissioning plans with a different eye, I think, than perhaps they were looked at when they were initially filed, because there's a bonding requirement that can, doesn't mean it has to be, levied by the commission. So that's kind of the backdrop of this. And I would say this is the first time this has happened in North Dakota. So you're part of the official history of North Dakota. So I don't have any other opening comments. I'd see if Commissioner Christman or Fedorchuk has anything.
Thank you. And I guess I would just point out what is obvious to most of us, but I don't know if Kevin has been involved in these conversations, so maybe he's the one that it's not obvious to, that I do think that these wind farms are something that do need to be bonded or have some other kind of financial assurances. And as we get into the discussion, I'll get into more detail of why. But this one, of course, the one that is 10 years old is very small compared to the wind farms that have been built in more recent years. And so it would be easy to just ignore that. Wow, it's just a couple and make an exception. But I think, on the other hand, just a couple of turbines maybe gives a good opportunity to think through the issues that are going to be involved when it's 50 or 75 or 100 and make a good basis for what we expect going forward. And so I think it's important to either specifically acknowledge that this is small and so it's an exception, or deal with it seriously in the same way we would if there were 100 turbines there instead of just a couple.
Sure. Okay, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Just very briefly, we talked about a number of different ways to sort of crack this egg, and I think I like how we settled in on this format. This is the first time going through it, but I think it gives us a chance to look, you know, at each project individually, and each project might be slightly different. So I appreciate the company updating their plan and the chance today to talk through some of the issues and maybe settle on some broader policies, or at least be more educated on this issue and the challenges that are part of it.
Okay, thank you. If we could just go around the table and get everybody's name for our informal record, starting with Jerry.
Jerry Lehan with staff.
Okay. Kevin Soli, Basin Electric.
Ryan Norrell, staff.
All right, thank you, Ryan. And we're joined by Patrick Vaughn and Sarah Cardwell from staff in the back row, just kind of listening, I think, and they're here if we have any questions. Kevin, I would say I would turn it over to you to make your pitch, and we'll kind of chime in with questions. And before I go that too far, though, the end place here for Jerry or for Ryan. So the company will make their pitch today about why they think their plan is correct, I would assume, and then we'll have our questions. And then do we then vote on this, or do we just – I mean, we've already accepted a decommissioning plan, but what would we do on this if we agree, and what would we do if we disagree, just to kind of get that out there?
You know, I think you can do what you want here,
okay,
because in my mind, the rule says that you may require a bond. So I don't think the rule says anything about having to issue an order not requiring a bond, or if you go that way. If you want to require the bond, then we would work up some kind of a document for it.
Okay, then I would guess that if we require would want to require a bond, the company could be able to back and forth, there'd be some discussion. Or we could just go, we've reviewed this and it looks fine.
If you don't want to require a bond, we can do as much explanation as you want.
But if we go to not, if we'd say no bond, I think we'd want to encapsulate that we had this meeting at some point in time, that at such and such time the commission held an informal and they reviewed it and they found the plan adequate at this time.
Yeah.
I don't know, for Julie and Randy, I'm just kind of talking that through a little bit as we, this is more of a work session discussion, but I wanted to cue it up right now just to get us thinking about it.
And I agree with that. And just one other thing for conversations. You know, in our rules that were put in place that set up this system that after 10 years we're going to give this another look, we talk about securing a performance bond, a surety bond, a letter of credit, a corporate guarantee, or other form of financial assurance that is accepted by the commission. And so I guess I'm thinking unless we're talking about one of those specifically when we talk about bonding here, I'm usually talking about one of those or until we get a little further down the road. To me, I'm kind of equating these all together as a set of options that someone would have. And so,
okay.
To your point.
When I mentioned bonding, I'm talking about financial assurances, I guess.
Okay. To your point on follow-up, when we started this in September, we opened a formal investigation. That's what we technically did. Right. So do we have some obligation to report on the findings of the investigation or, you know, how do we conclude a formal investigation?
I think in the past, you've done a variety of things, including just closing the docket without.
Right, so we can do whatever.
Okay. Just to cue that up as the first topic of our work session, Patrick had something he wanted to say. Grab a mic if you could, Pat.
I was just thinking that you'd probably want to have some form of assurance and financial assurance that the wind turbines are going to be decommissioned. And so whether that's a corporate assurance or a bond assurance, something like that, you maybe want to make that decision in the end and have it on record.
Okay.
And if you decide on something that we're pretty sure the company wants to have more to say about, you might want to have a hearing.
Okay. All right, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but get everybody thinking about it, because it's certainly the begin at the end in mind sometimes is important.
I want to run to my office and get my bigger file on the...
All right, Commissioner Fedorchak's going to get the bigger file. All right.
Uh-oh. We're in trouble.
I'll just pontificate a bit here, too. I liked Commissioner Christman's comments about dealing with everyone a little bit different. Like even when we do siting, the commission used to cite everything, was it less than or more than 99 megawatts or something? And then it was down to 60, and now we're down to basically everything. And we've done hearings where if it's one turbine, we don't even necessarily really have a hearing. So maybe it'll be interesting how the decommissioning goes, whether it's, I wouldn't think the same rules would apply for decommissioning of two wind turbines as decommissioning of 200 wind turbines. Maybe it would, you know?
Although initially, I do think we're looking at this concept, and if we were to say, you know, a couple hundred thousand bucks, if worst case scenario, the state could go up and clean it up.
I wouldn't say that.
And we just decided to let this whole thing go.
Right.
Then where do we draw that line?
At absolutely.
Two, three, four. So I think initially we should be talking about the concept. Right. And recognizing we could be talking about hundreds of millions of dollars over all of these across the whole state. And then at the end of the day, maybe conclude, well, this one is an exception or something because it's one small turbine somewhere.
Kevin, just so you know, as soon as Julie gets back, we'll let you have your nickel. But it'll be interesting that, you know, you've put down numbers here that, or what numbers you believe to be accurate. It'll be interesting to see what the variety of what the price of steel is to vice the price of a crane, and as we start comparing apples to apples or apples to oranges in different companies, the debate. So it's good to be first in a sense that you've set the mark. This is what you have.
So. Well, I guess.
All right. All right. Here comes Julie right now, so we'll turn it over to you, Kevin.
All right. Again, it's Kevin Sully with Basin Electric. I work in the environmental section there, and environmental is responsible for all different types of permitting, including the siting permits. This particular issue regards the two 1.5 megawatt Nordex turbines. and they're informally referred to as Willie and Wally. They were a test case or a pilot project to see if we could build wind and how it would work. The official name for the project is the Minot Wind Project, and these turbines were installed in 2002 near the old Minot radar base, and in fact were connected to Virendry Power's radar base substation is where these interconnect. Initially, we prepared a decommissioning plan for the entire Basin Electric, let's call it the wind complex. There's 77 turbines in Prairie Winds ND1. There were two existing the two existing Nordex turbines with the blue towers, and then we added three to that. So we're talking, our original estimate that we provided to the PSC some time ago was for 82 wind turbines. And I think I mentioned in my letter, and I think you can see, you know, fairly straightforward, that there's going to be a difference in decommissioning 2 versus decommissioning 82. The mobilization costs are kind of the one of the biggest parts of this, because the cranes are somewhat rare and hard to get and expensive. So
Kevin, on that note, completely understand your point about economy of scale, but since they came online in different times with different technologies, how would you envision? You'd think the older ones with the older technology are going to wear out first. And then after you're not producing electricity for a year, I mean, how would you get? I mean, I would envision they're all need to shut down at the same time.
Well, again, that's a good point. We kind of looked at the wind park as a whole. There is, I guess, you know, maybe 5-6 years difference in the ages of the turbines. The one thing that I can tell you about the turbines in question is that they were early turbines. And we have since upgraded control systems and pieces and parts to make them more reliable and to work better. And so I guess I would consider these the Nordex turbines, you know, essentially equivalent to the GE turbines that we have on site. So there's no plan to you know, stop using them sooner.
Okay, thank you.
As I mentioned, the cost estimates, of course, then are a bit different, again, based on, as Commissioner Kalk mentioned, the economy of scale. I guess we're looking at a useful life for wind turbine installations of, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30 years, say 25 years is kind of the standard. The thing that I believe that should be looked at as well is that there are people contacting us about upgrades and retrofits to these original turbines. So just because the original wind farm was built and, say, commissioned in 2010, there's certainly a chance that it would be retrofitted and it would go on much past this 25-year kind of planning horizon. So that's a little bit about the turbines in question here and what we're doing up there. I just had a couple other kind of quick bullets here to go through here. And first of all, you know, Basin Electric is a local North Dakota company, and we have a solid reputation, and we have, you know, certainly the resources are available to fulfill all of our obligations. There's no worries there.
So, Kevin, when you say resources are available, does that mean when you budget every year, there's a line item that says decommissioning of Wally and Willie X amount of dollars? It's in your budget every year?
No, it's not. But I guess for the amounts that we're discussing here, we, you know, and I'll get to our credit ratings here in a bit, but we have the ability, we have cash on hand, of course, and the ability to get additional funds.
By going back, okay. Because right. I think that's going to become some at the end of this, begin at the end of mine again, about you say just what you said, and that appears like that will be your answer why you're not worried about it, but then something back to us that assures that is how would we encapsulate something like that? You just gave me your word that you're going to have the money.
Right.
What's the corporate thing of that?
I think what needs to be looked at, and the rule actually alludes to it as well, is looking at some of these outside rating agencies. So we have a rating from Fitch, from S&P, and from Moody's. And in every case, we're, you know, AA1 or A+. So we're a solid, you know, have very solid credit. Beyond that, they also provide an outlook, and so we have a stable outlook for our rating as we move into the future. So, again, all of that financial information is in our annual report, and I have it, you know, available here as well. So, again, I think the credit rating, as it's, you know, mentioned in the rule, and, you know, as demonstrated, I guess, by our rating.
Could I ask one question there? And this isn't so much directed towards you, Kevin, as our other staff. I remember with one of the coal companies, they didn't have a bond, but they had a rating from a credit rating that we use kind of in lieu of a bond. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah,
GRE or one of the companies didn't require a bond. Yeah, wasn't it a rating agency similar to what Kevin just suggested?
No, that's exactly right, but I can't remember how they encapsulated that to us. It can be. Not that we don't believe you, but it's something, you know, that does that.
So. I guess I can speak to it from another area that I work in. Through our landfills, our solid waste facilities are permitted through the North Dakota Department of Health. And in those permits and in the health department's rules, there's something called financial assurance for closure and post-closure care, essentially decommissioning. Absolutely. You know, again, their rules are, I think, based on some EPA language, but there is, again, such a thing as a corporate guarantee. And so that is the mechanism.
How do you do that?
It's a big, kind of a fairly big paperwork package. So there's a senior VP of finance signing off, and so.
Okay. And then is that something that lenders see? And I'm trying to think down the road. So we accept the corporate guarantee, but something happens, and Basin or any of the other players isn't making it financially. Are we ahead of the other lenders that have liens on the company in getting what assets there are in order to do this? Or is this just something, well, they said they were going to, but they don't have any money now?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I guess I don't know. The one thing that I can tell you is that we update our financial assurance for closure and post-closure care with the North Dakota Health Department every year. So there's an affirmation made every single year that we're good to go, that we have we can meet our obligations for those tasks.
I think that's an official thing that tends to give us what we need. But we need to follow up on that.
Right. And if I may, yeah, there are multiple mechanisms for financial assurance in the landfill business. There's bonding that's been mentioned, corporate guarantee, there's surety letter. There are different, you know, I think seven different mechanisms that are possible to use in this other other area of permitting.
Because if I may, Mr. Chairman, you know, the ability to pay is one of the things that I'm concerned about. The willingness to pay is another one. And, you know, we can get 20 years down the road and in the case of a coal mine, when land is ready to is finished mining and reclaimed, we have our reclamation people out there and they look at it and they determine whether that is good quality grass that's been planted, whether it's adequate amounts of grass that have taken off, if it's in cropland, whether it's producing adequately. All those things have to be done and get our approval before that bond is released. But if there's nothing except for, well, there's a strong company that's capable of doing that, when we get to the end of the day and have a disagreement over whether it's the land is reseeded well or poorly, we have no leverage if it's just an agreement. It's basically leaving it up to the company to tell us when they've reclaimed it well enough. So the will, it's not only the ability, but the willingness.
Certainly, you know, Basin is a reputable company, and right. we would follow every and all rule. So there's no question there. One other thing that perhaps factors in here is the language on the easements with the landowners or the wind leases, the leases and easements. So there were obligated, legally obligated to the landowners to reclaim their land as well. So there's, I think, multiple levers here that kind of work to get the land back to where it needs to be.
Well, it's a larger question outside of Basin for Randy and I and Julie to talk to the legislature about. There's a very specific set of rules and laws about what decommissioning means, and I've often thought about that for wind. There's no rules. It says decommission, but you've got your landowner stuff, but there's nothing that says 10 years of productivity or put it. They're so vague. Okay. So we'll find landowners and wind farm companies doing decommissioning. If they don't come to resolution, then it'll be then what? Because there's nothing in the books that says that. It's a whole question about, you were probably around when they set all this up. It's like the wind farm decommissioning has been purposely just set off to the side. And here we are now.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you just happened to be the first guy in.
Yeah, what luck.
Okay. All right, please continue.
I guess I don't have too much to offer beyond those few points about, you know, certainly our kind of solid, deep roots here in North Dakota. You know, we certainly have the financial wherewithal to meet our obligations. And I guess the last thing is, you know, if there is some type of requirement for financial assurance or bonding imposed on us, there's a cost to that. And, of course, that cost will have to be paid somehow. And just about in any case, that cost would be passed along to the rate payers. So that's something that, you know, we're always looking out for. I guess my kind of the last thing that I can think to say right now is that I think it's appropriate to look at these case by case, because not every company is the same, and not every financial situation is the same, and not every wind development is the same. So I don't think a one-size-fits-all is a good approach. I guess as I've, you know, mentioned in the letter and in the decommissioning estimate, you know, the costs are not huge for two turbines. You know, we're talking, what is it, $67,000 or something all in, we figure, beyond the salvage value. So with that, I
have a couple questions, if I could, just about the plan.
Absolutely. Yeah, I figured we'd probably wander through that.
Kevin, thanks for being our guinea pig today. In terms of the salvage value, I'm looking at the second page of the decommissioning plan. It says roughly 210 tons of salvage steel per turbine are available. And then it's $180 per ton, and estimated value $42,000 per turbine. Does that take into consideration or net out the cost to transport that to a market to sell it?
No, that would be the cost delivered.
The value,
right? Yeah, and I would value it, right?
But I would assume that it's pretty expensive to move that stuff.
You know, I guess probably the nearest rail would be the likely spot to take it to a mill for reprocessing. Yep. So you'd need to
get into Minot.
Right, getting into Minot and onto the rail.
So it doesn't include transportation.
No,
costs.
It does not. The one thing too, since you mentioned the cost, and certainly steel is a commodity, so that number is going to go up and down with
right.
the economy, and so is what it is. The other thing I mentioned in our estimate as well is that we haven't kind of dug down to say, okay, we've got, you know, 4 tons of copper and, you know, 2 tons of mm-hmm. this type of, you know, rare earth magnets and things like that. So there's no accounting for that. So that, I think, makes our estimate somewhat conservative.
Yeah. The fluctuating price of deal, though, does underscore the danger of putting all our assurances in salvage value, that these, yours or any other wind farm, is going to be able to cover decommissioning just simply by the salvage value. That might be kind of naive, depending on the
price. Right, and we're not saying that.
No.
But it covers a portion of it.
A portion of it, yep, correct. But it does sort of underscore where Commissioner Christman is going in terms of having some sort of financial assurance beyond that.
Were you on a roll? Or?
No, I think that was my biggest. And the other only question I had was, did you, when these farms were constructed, was there any sort of documentation of what the landscape was, the topography?
There would be topo before construction.
Okay, so those documents exist, and so you can use them to reclaim the land to its prior state.
I would just throw out there that in questions at lots of hearings about that, the level of detail varies greatly from companies. Basin may have taken pictures, and other companies just, there was a road there.
Yeah.
Because the rules were, it's yeah.
And we know the topsoil isn't saved.
Correct.
And if I may, in order, I guess normally to do the civil engineering on this to figure out what you need to do to build the roads and the turbine pads, there's, you know, typically the site would be flown, and so we'd have LIDAR, and we'd have 1 foot resolution on the contours, the lay of the land. So should be.
And you think that would be pretty much required for anyone?
Well, I think most people who would be doing it would use that type of type of mapping in order to do their design.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do they keep it? It was Patrick's question. And how well do they keep it? And if they went defunct, you couldn't find that information anyway. Yeah. All what if games. Mm-hmm.
To follow up on salvage, to me, for Basin or any of the others, if we are going to require some kind of financial assurance, I don't consider the salvage value an issue to us. It might be something that the company uses in order to capture some kind of guarantee from a bonding company or something like that. But if any wind farm operator has things go bad for them and we get stuck with this project, for all we know, there may be a lien on that salvage value too, and it might be sitting there, but we might not be able to get it. And secondly, we're not experts in marketing or dismantling this stuff, and so to me, I think we need something that we can spend to hire people to clean up a problem. So I'll just throw that out there. To me, the salvage value is an issue for the company and not for me.
You're not drawing any conclusions today. Where are you?
I don't see that we're in the salvage business, and I don't want us to get in the salvage business.
Very clear point.
Okay. Now, after that, maybe some of these have less of an opinion. I think I read through 20 of these. But I don't see much about any hazardous materials, and I'm not talking the quote hazardous materials list as opposed to corrosive or flammable or that, but I'm talking about anything that would take special care at either a landfill or for people who are out there working. There's got to be petroleum products up there, various metals that require certain things. I don't know if the fiberglass, if that were hauled to a landfill, does that take some special landfill, or is it just normal waste? Do you have any kind of an inventory of what's out there, and so that we would know what a contractor, if someone had to be brought in, would have to do to handle it and what they would be able to do with it?
Well, I guess, yes, we know what types of lubricants and coolants and other oils are in the turbines. We have another section of rule deals with that, the SPCC plans. And I don't have that number off the top of my head, but so we do know what type of fluids are in there.
Is SPCC, that's something? not associated with us?
A health department issue, okay. Kind of EPA. Kind
like
of
an MDS sheet or something like that.
Well, it's a spill prevention and control plan is what it is. And so at a certain level of stored oils or lubricants, then you kind of account for this. So okay.
To me, that should be a part of these decommissioning plans, every one of them, because, if we had to hire a contractor, we'd have to deal with it.
I guess regarding your question about the fiberglass in the blades in the rotors, I don't think that there's any special precautions required for that, and I can say that with fairly good certainty because my job at the state was working with landfills, and so it's not asbestos-containing material or anything like that. So,
is there anything else besides the lubricants that would require special treatment?
The coolants. There may be some other electronic components, parts of the control system. But, I think I looked at a number of other decommissioning plans as well as we put together ours. If we can't really count the salvage value, but I think there's probably precious metals in some of those things that, you know, could be a problem.
So that's one thing that I think we need to add to our decommissioning plans is to...
Well, we need to be careful, Commissioner, though, I think, is that the... And this is just not to get off tangent too far, but we're not in a work session mode here. If one of us says something now, you take it for what it's worth. It may not mean we all three agree on it, but maybe we'd all do three agree on it. I just... For what it's worth for all of us.
Yeah, I'm speaking for myself.
Speaking for himself, that may be all of us when we're all said and done, but... I wouldn't, don't go resubmitting something here until we figure out where, unless you want to. I have to do that, Commissioner.
That's fine. I guess another thing that I think we're going to, that I hope we do at some point before we decide what to do with these, and to me it comes as part of requiring financial assurances, is that we figure out what are our standards for soil reclamation and revegetation.
Agreed.
This doesn't have to do with wind farms or coal or anything else, but I'll just tell you, as a property owner, having had road work come through the property, pipelines come through the property, there's a lot of different levels of what those operators feel is reclaimed. And there's never a bond there. It's always a couple acres. It's never worth going to court over, and they know it. And so I think since the legislature has handed this off to us as something to be overseeing, we are going to need to set some standards for what we feel is acceptable.
Well, and I think that there's a component to that of property rights, too. If you have a landowner that wants to leave all the roads in place and they want to leave the turbines in place, it could be an extreme scenario, but then the PSC's jurisdiction to go and take somebody's property, it's different than a coal mine where the land is completely given to the coal mine until the property is done.
That is one scenario, and yeah. I agree, but I mean the other scenario is the property owner that would like it done better but had one turbine. And so, you're probably talking $5,000 that he feels there's damages there. Can't afford to get a lawyer to go fight with the company about it. So that's what you get.
Ryan, maybe between you and Alana, just start digging about other states and see what they've done with some of these issues, because we can't be the first state that's dealing with this.
Austin did that for us last
time. Right, I was going to say, I think Austin had.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Kind of got a start on that.
All right. It'll be a good work session.
And I think maybe my last kind of thing for you, and I was a little disappointed in this part. Let me just find it here, the decommissioning plan you sent in. The costs of a crane, the costs of a backhoe, operator, trucks, laborers, wheel loaders, all that stuff. It looks to me like it's just the exact same list from 2010. And I can't believe that those prices haven't gone up. And so it doesn't really look like there was a lot of thought put into this, Kevin.
Yes, I understand that. Yeah, I think there's been some inflation, fairly low levels of inflation, and that's one of the things that I actually looked at based on what we do with the financial assurance for the landfills, is that every year there's kind of that CPI, if you will, is published. And so I thought about adding those in for those years since this was originally put together, but I didn't think it would amount to a whole lot of change. And the biggest change really is again in the mobilization costs, where we're just doing two turbines here rather than.
And so now, I guess my big question for you on that is, as we're coming up with a system that works and has some consistency to it, do you think it's better to readdress it annually or every couple years or every 5 years and just see where prices have gone, or to start it out when we're talking about something that's 20 or 25 years away, starting it out with some formula for determining a future value and set it high, expecting there's going to be a certain level of inflation? Or I'm curious, with your work with landfills and stuff, what's the best way to approach that?
Well, the way the health department does it, and it's based on how the EPA would do it with hazardous waste landfills, is that it's the cost for, you know, because let's say you don't know what's going to happen and you're going to have to close this largest open area of the landfill, you know, and so there's that's kind of the worst case scenario. So you might not have that much. Let's say the total landfill is 40 acres. And right now you're just working in 10 acres of it, but through your plans, the largest open area is 20 acres. So we would do the financial assurance for the largest open area for 20 acres. So it doesn't match what the situation on the ground is. But I guess to kind of get to your question after that kind of winding example is I think it would be today's costs, and then you would just adjust for inflation every year.
Do they do it every year? It seems like a lot of trouble to go through for annually, to tell you the truth.
It is. At Basin Electric, it involves civil engineering, environmental, legal, and finance, and I might be missing one. So it is. There's, in order to do this corporate guarantee every year, there's a fair amount of work that goes into it to update the estimates and adjust for inflation.
I don't think I have any other questions for.
Okay. Julie, do you have any follow-up after any questions?
Not on this particular plan.
Okay. Let's see here. I for Randy, I don't believe I disagree with anything you said. And that whole dialogue, it's just trying to figure out the best way and to get the right message back to different companies and all that. Just, I think what we should do, though, is do we have the rest of these scheduled of those four for the informals?
We're trying to do them on the 29th.
Of January. Yeah. That's really good then.
Those are, Minn Kota had those two turbines.
Okay.
And the rest of it is FPL.
Okay, so maybe the 29th meeting we could schedule a work session on all of them, because I suspect we'll probably be treating them similar to start with. I would throw this out to the company and for maybe discussion quickly, is that if you're viewing this as a larger plan of these two turbines are no longer of the 2002 vintage, you're saying they're of the 2009 vintage, right? I mean, basically, you're saying that you're not going to decommission two wind farms or two turbines.
That's correct.
I would say that there's an opportunity here somehow, perhaps, to company to submit something back to the PSC that says, we submitted this, these two wind farms are now part of our larger project, we wish to delay this until we consider the larger wind farm. I'm throwing that out as a potential scenario that maybe we should even talk about briefly, that I think it's if we're going to treat, we have to make a decision if we're going to treat these as two or as part of the larger wind farm. And if we're going to treat them as part of the larger wind farm, it's hard to assess a bond for two that ties into a bigger wind farm.
The two wind farms are or
turbines. I said
the, well, there's yeah, there's the Minot
2, 3, and 1.
Right. The Minot wind farm then is composed of the original two plus three additional. Okay, and then there's the 77, and they are they're not interconnected. They have different interconnections. They're not contiguous. So to me, they're separate.
The direct question I have for you is do you envision taking down these two separate from the other ones? Because if you do, this plan is completely wrong. If you're going to say together, then we need to assess the bond on everything.
Well, yes.
Potentially.
Certainly. And I guess my understanding here is that this is just in respect to the two 1.3 megawatt Nordex turbines that are of that 10-year-old vintage. So we would, I guess, revisit this for the rest of the turbines when the time comes, I guess.
So if I'm understanding you...
It's like an amnesty for these two turbines until we deal with...
Well, you're saying, does the company want to, for the purpose of decommissioning, only consider these as part of the larger project? And I'd be open to something like that if that's what the company is, realistically going to do. But it also is fine to have them on their own.
That's why I just threw that out as a discussion point, because if it was just... the two turbines by themselves, the decommissioning plan, we have all this discussion and we come up with some resolution, whatever that might be. But if these two are part of the larger system that you'd never envision taking down separately, then it's hard to come to an outcome that we deal with some number plan dealing with just two when the costs are going to be all different because you're going to do it as part of a larger group.
I would think that if there's going to be financial assurances required, the company would be wise to want to deal with this separately so they don't have to worry about the 77 for a few years down the road. Why spend money on them when they don't have to?
Or the other way around. These two are amnestied out until the other ones come into play.
Or that. But, when we, based on the numbers you turned in, when we deal with two of them, we're talking about $75,000. When we deal with 82, we're talking about $40,000 each. If the financial assurances are for 82 times 40,000, that's whatever that number is. And if there's one little corner of this thing where there's been trouble and they don't produce as well as they thought one time anyway, and there's not a need for the power, and the company just says, well, those 10 we're not going to use anymore, there's a timeline in here where if they don't get used for a certain period of time, they're considered shut down. Is it 18 or 24 months or something like that? So there could be the chance that there is a reclamation project of a portion of a wind farm, I would think.
I agree.
And so then, it would cost more per turbine, but there would be that pool times the whole amount. And so at some point, I think they'll probably be all blended in. But
fair enough. Okay. Anything else, Julie? Randy?
Nope.
Ryan?
Nope.
Jerry?
I could just ask on this, just so we're clear on this salvage, is that you've assumed here that you're junking the whole thing to some scrapyard, whereas in reality there might be a market for the parts?
That's, I guess, another possibility that could be looked at if they could be reused somewhere else, certainly.
It goes to the salvage value, which we may not be using anyway, but I'm just pointing out that value is probably low. Just my thought. And the cost of steel I would expect to go up as time goes on, not down. So that's all I had. Thanks.
Okay.
So in terms of process, we'll have the other informals on the other projects. And then we'll have a work session talking about the bigger issue of what if anything we want to require additional.
I'm open to anything. I just threw that out there as a starting point. If you want to do them individually or together,
I think we need to come up with what it is we want to do, and that would apply for all of them.
Right.
Similar, at least in a general framework, and then go back to each of them with a report.
I thought that would work well, is if we schedule the next meeting for the work session on all four wind farms, and then we have the informals for the other ones, and then we can sit down and notice all of them, have the general discussion, and if we want to break it into specifics, we sure can. Mm-hmm. If that sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. I had one more question I could ask Kevin. The hazardous fluids and so forth that are in these things, they're changed on a regular schedule, right?
That's correct. The lubricants are changed out. And
always are disposing of those lubricants. There's a standard procedure for that.
That's right. And I guess I would, I wouldn't say that they're hazardous wastes or have hazardous substances even. I think we go through extra efforts to find oils and lubricants that are not, you know. So, but anyway, they are still certainly, you know, coolants and lubricants that would have to be disposed.
Okay. Ryan, what's the protocol if the company, based on discussion today, wants to add more information to what they've submitted? There's no formal hearing here. Is that appropriate?
I would have to check on it, but I would think that they could submit, an amended or updated filing or something like a after-acquired evidence type something. It's not that formal, so I don't think it'd have to be termed that, but at least, inform us of that. And
I would just offer that up, that you've heard from all three of us individually, and if there's something that you wanted to add or tweak, or that'd be the protocol. Then we'll look at that when the time comes. Okay. Kevin, anything else?
The last thing I guess that I can mention is that, I think that there are different financial assurance mechanisms that are set out in the rules that are in place. And so I guess, certainly no one really likes a one-size-fits-all. And if there is some flexibility in those rules to, do stuff creatively, if you will, or use the best kind of least costly method of financial assurance, that's, I guess we would appreciate that.
You had something, Andy?
Yeah, I was just going to point out when we talk about submitting more information potentially. My point wasn't looking for like new updated costs on a crane or a truck or something like that. I was kind of trying to get to the point that how do we do. You're giving your suggestion to how to build this out for 20 or 25 years. Is it a future value or something? I was trying to get to the point that these things change. So I'm not looking for new data immediately on that.
All right, one more time around the hook.
Nothing.
Boom, boom, boom. All right, thank you all. We'll go ahead and close the informal on case number PU 13-793. Thank you all.